We are going to show you how to teach at home.
I am going to show you a miracle puzzle.
Before I round things out with an endless canvas and a lot of note-taking.
Oh, be still my heart. Could it be time? Yes, it is. iOS
Today!
iOS Today comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees LastPass? Can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of iOS Today is brought to you by LastPass. Prepare for the unexpected in your business with LastPass, trusted by over 17 million users and 61,000 businesses worldwide. Visit LastPass.com/Twit to find out how they can help you. And by Mint Mobile. They provide the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything's online. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their three-month introductory plan. Plus, get the plan shipped to your door free at mintmobile.com/iOS. I want to hear that accent you did on Catch the Hacker. Holy cow.
Stephanie Studebaker, is that who you're talking about?
Stephanie Studebaker.
From corporate.
I thought this was our Friday after hours. It was a fun version of Werewolf where you're trying to catch a hacker. I won't spoil it for you by telling you who the hacker was, but it was a surprise. Let's put it that way. Yes. And you were the moderator, Stephanie Studebaker from corporate.
Oh, boy.
It was very funny. It was cute. It was so good.
Well, I had not played Werewolf except the day before we did a little trial to make sure that things were going to go well. Yeah, it is a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. You need a large group, though. We had a large group, a lot of great people playing. So that's on our YouTube feed if you want to take a look at that and hear Stephanie Studebaker. I'm always careful about accents because I don't think I could sustain them as you did for an hour. I usually find that my accents migrate.
Yeah, normally in shows, I don't end up having to keep them for very long. Yeah. But for that one, you know, you're playing the role.
Yeah, so. You did it. You got into it. You embodied Stephanie Studebaker.
I did my best, I'll tell you.
So today, put on your mortarboard. By the way, congratulations to all the graduates who are unfortunately not getting a walk this month. But there are a lot of people studying at home now.
There are, yeah, and a lot of parents sort of having to fill in the gaps with helping to teach kids how to study, teach kids, you know, whatever the work has to be. In fact, my co-host on Tech News Weekly, Jason Howell, has often talked about being a teacher at home for his
two
little
girls. Yeah, it's tough. It's a lot of work for parents who aren't used to doing this.
And you know, they changed math. I don't know how many times I hear that.
Yeah.
I hear that more than anything else. Yeah. Apparently, they've changed math, the way that math is learned. And so, you know, I empathized to the best of my ability and said, I think it might be good to do an episode where we talk about how to help your kids or whomever you might be teaching at home, how to help them and how to teach them and maybe to sort of refresh yourself on some of those concepts. Because there are times where, you know, I'll pull out an equation to try and figure out some measurements for a project that I'm working on. But it's not often that I'm sitting there doing, you know, word problems and things like that. So a refresher on how that all worked seemed to be a great way to you know, go forth with this episode of iOS Today.
And as it turns out, the iPad is really a great tool for this. I hope you have iPads at home that you can let the kids use for teaching.
Yeah, for iPhones, learning. iPod Touches even.
And we should
It
might even be worth starting by telling people how you can pin an app. so that when you give – this is a problem for younger kids. When you give them the iPad, they're not tempted to launch Netflix and watch Phineas and Ferb instead of doing their homework. So help me pin this app.
Help. You're on.
Do you know how to do this? I hope you do, because I'm
right. I'm putting me on the spot here.
Putting you on the spot.
I've got to remember. So I know we go into settings, as one always does, and we are going to choose – I want to say – see, here we go. I can't remember if it's privacy or if it's
something else. I've got an app like this Microsoft Math app we talked about last week, which inspired this whole project, by the way, because it's such a cool teaching app. So I'd like to say, okay, you know, I want to give this to the kid, but I don't want him to do anything else. It's also good for proctoring exams and things like that, right? You could say, we're going to give you a test and you can't get out of the test. Is it under parental control? I'm sorry to spring this on you. I should have brought this up sooner.
No, this is a good...
But I do feel like it's the first thing you want to know is how to lock something down. You know, I bet you if I just search for PIN, not PIM, PIN app, no, Pinterest, a lot of stuff on Pinterest. Nope, I guess that search is just not helping us.
I think it's been moved into screen time. How to set up parental controls on your iPhone.
Wow. I love it. We can't do it. We can't do it. It's not smart lock.
It is under screen time.
It's under screen time. All right, let's go.
Yeah, we're going to launch screen time.
Okay, so let me go down here to screen time.
It's right above general.
Oh, it's of course, it's more important than general. It's up there.
And
you can
choose,
see I'm 52% down from last week. So I'm
make sure that's... good. Yeah, it looks like you have screen time turned on. That's good. And then tap content and privacy restrictions.
Okay.
And then you
can
choose.
Turn those on. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, turn those on. And then you can choose allowed apps.
Okay.
And just set it to.
Just do it like that. Yeah, just say just that one app. I wonder if I can then, now Michael, turn on screen time. I could turn on screen time for him. But, okay, choose apps you want at all times. Allowed contacts. This really does have a lot of control. So, yeah, I guess just say
a little bit. There was less control and more just you get this one app. But now it seems that there are a lot more settings that you can flip switches on and change. But, yeah, there used to be an option to just sort of I just want this one app.
Yeah. You know, what I used to do when I would hand off my iPad. How to lock apps on iPhone using guided access. So let's try that.
It's guided access. Right, yeah, general. And then accessibility.
It's an accessibility thing.
Oh, wait. Accessibility is its own screen now. That's right.
So let's go down to accessibility.
And choose
guided access. Okay. And that's off. Guided access keeps the iPad in a single app.
There we go.
And allows you to control which features are available. So you can have a passcode, which is probably a good idea. Or even use Face ID.
Ooh,
then you can only unlock it, right? Clever.
Love it.
You could have a time limit, which is kind of cool.
Oh my God, you can set an alarm.
You could say, nope, you're done. You could have accessibility shortcuts that you may or may not want. And you could also see how long it takes your iPad to automatically lock during a guided access. You could have auto lock turn off, which I would. Because you don't want to have them come running over and saying, Daddy, can you unlock your iPad for me? So turn off auto lock, turn on guided access.
Yeah, and then, you launch the app that you want to use, and then you triple click that top button.
So I go into my math app, and then I just triple click, and it says guided access. Oh, you can't see it. Let me move it down a little bit. It says guided access, and then start. And now I'll enter a passcode, 123456. Not a good passcode, 123456, but an easy one to remember. And now to exit it, you triple click. But see, this is great. Now the kids can only do their math problems. They can't swipe up to get out. They can't swipe around. They can't get out. They're stuck doing their math problems.
11.
11. That's exactly what I typed there. So, and then if you want, if it's, you know, parental time, You triple click this. Oh, try again with Face ID. And that ended it. So I, instead of using the PIN, I used Face ID, which was kind of cool. So now I can get out of it.
Nice.
So that's a good thing to know for parents. If you're going to hand off your iPad, you know, it's not that, you know, kids are trying to cheat, but it's just too easy for them to do something else or exit, and actually more importantly, accidentally exit.
Exactly.
You want to keep them in there. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's very, I mean, I can get distracted. I might want to set guided access for myself.
I know.
Just to keep me from switching around a bunch.
Work. Don't do anything else.
Right. Oh, there's a notification. Let me hop over to it. No. You got to stay here. Yeah. So that's good.
We have brought some apps to show you that you might want to lock in.
Yeah, lock it in.
With your kiddies. You know, can I just show this real quick? Because I think Microsoft deserves such credit for what they've done with Minecraft. This is the education version.
This is interesting. I'd never heard of this.
Yeah. Now, I can't, if I go back here, I can't use the full game unless I have a Microsoft education account. So check with your school and see if you can get one. And I hope you have one because they have physics, they have chemistry, there's all sorts of lessons. And because it's Minecraft, for a certain age, I'd say 7 to 13 or 14, this is going to be a lot more fun. So here's our problem. A village is threatened by fire, needs your help. This is a beginner one. 1 hour, it's the hour of code, AI for good. Program your coding assistant, the agent, to navigate the forest and collect data about the fires. Then write code to help prevent the spread of fire, save the village, and bring life back to the forest. See, isn't that awesome?
That's really cool.
Now, for parents, you can go to the website and see the lesson plan, or this was actually intended for teachers originally. But a good idea as a parent, if you're going to be doing this, to read through the prep and the notes, especially if you don't know much about programming, you might learn something too. And I think for younger kids, this would be a great thing to do together. So let's create the world. And the import has started. And now we are generating a world. Computers have to be taught to learn, sort of like students. AI is used to collect and analyze forest data, which is faster than counting trees by hand. Again, a seven-year-old, you might read that to them and work with them. And now we are in, which is so great. So your first quest is to talk to the researcher. So let's just walk up here and talk to the researcher.
Nice.
I have to right click. I can press a button. Welcome to the research center. Here you're gonna. Now notice, by the way, I just want to mention this real quickly. This is also on a PC, so that's where the right click me comes from. But you'll see on see on an iPad. You can also press a talk button, and that's good, so that you don't have to use your mouse. Welcome to the research center. Here you'll use blah, blah, blah. Press C to start coding. All right. Or touch the agent icon. Press C to code or touch the agent icon. There's the helper bot.
Is the agent the one on the top right to the right of the pause button? Is that an agent?
This?
In the middle of the screen at the top, there's a pause button.
Oh, there's the agent. Oh, yeah. Starting tutorial. Very good. See, you'd make an excellent student. Okay. And you're going to see that this is a kind of programming that we've talked about before, this kind of modular style of programming where you drag pieces on. So this is on start. That says, I know it's a little small. It's hard to read. I'm going to drag, and you can click and show a hint. I'm going to drag open gate over and plug it in to that module, and then I'll press play and let's see. The gate opened.
Nice.
I can go in. So
made
then we're
it.
Gonna walk in to the wall.
Now can you use your if you were connected, are you able to use the keyboard, iPad keyboard?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I'm not right now. And typically, you know, it depends on the kid. You don't have to have a keyboard to do this. The kid might just be holding it. So it just depends on how you're going to do it and whether you have a keyboard. But it's not required for this because in every case, they give you a simple way to, if I tap the helper bot, I can talk to the helper bot. This is the agent. So I'm not going to go through this whole thing. But as you could see, this is going to be a coding lesson. But what's great from the point of view of a kid is this is a world they know and love and they feel very comfortable in. And so I think this is just a really nice thing Microsoft has done to make Minecraft one of the most popular. It is the most popular PC game of all time and very popular with kids. So if you have a kid, I would say sixth grade, middle school,
maybe some early high school, depending on how motivated they are. You know, I have a 12th grader or 11th grader, soon to be 12th grader, and he is so interested in Minecraft still, and he wants to learn coding. This is kind of a natural thing.
Yeah.
So, this is available in the App Store. It's the education edition of Minecraft. You can find it. It's what I the 1 hour of code thing is a demo that you can use without having an account, but for the full education, Minecraft education, you'll need a Microsoft education account, a student or a teacher. What about you, Mr. Micah?
Well, something that I think about is being back in school and having to purchase a graphing calculator and how pricey those TI-84, whatever number we're on now, calculators could be. And sometimes, you know, the classes would have them, but maybe you're at home and so you can't get one from the class, but you do have, you know, an iPhone or an iPad device in the house. And I was pleasantly surprised to discover that there is a free, and when I say free, I mean completely free, not free with in-app purchases, but free graphing calculator available in the App Store. It's called Desmos Graphing Calculator, and it is a full-on, well, let's go back. Getting started is what I was looking for. It's a full-on graphing calculator that will actually use, you know, everything. You've got your quadratic equations and inequalities and integrals and all sorts of things that will let you graph your functions and regressions and charts and lines and things like that. I have received this question more than many other, you know, folks asking, what is an app that I can use for my algebra class or my, you know, beginning calc class? And it could be kind of hard to discover an app that didn't cost $1 billion, but that provided the graphing calculator functions that you need to be able to, you know, create graphs and things like that. And so you can see here a simple line that you can adjust and start to see how the equation is shaped by the changes in the variables, as well as, you know, parabolas, including, let's see, where was the one that I was looking for? Not polar. But, oh, yeah, here we go. Some transformations and things like that. This is very complicated stuff that I can remember. It was sort of a magical dance of buttons you had to press on a graphing calculator to try and figure out how to make this happen. And the teacher ended up becoming more of a tech support person in those times rather than teaching how to solve these math equations because of how involved it was. And so to be able to hop in and find a specific category like transformations and translations, and then be able to make adjustments to those to see how the graph is shaped by that is incredible. And honestly, I'm a little jealous that I didn't have it back in high school when I was learning about these different graphs and functions and things like that. And again, I can't stress this enough. This is a free, utterly free graphing calculator that I've downloaded, and I haven't even created an account or anything like that, and I'm already in it using it completely. It's got loads of tutorials where you can learn how to use it even more, and a user guide, and you know, it works with a keyboard and everything. So it is a very powerful tool that can help you. I forgot to mention too, it's got lots of localizations. So it's in many a language, not just English, but several other languages as well. So if you're looking for a graphing calculator, whether you be, again, a parent or a guardian trying to help a student with math, or an actual student who needs a graphing calculator at home, this seems to be a fantastic option. Desmos graphing calculator.
You know, there is a tool that's a little more general that I recommend everybody have on their iPad or their iPhone. You can use it for free on your computer. And I think you're going to know this because you interviewed its creator, Stephen Wolfram.
I love Wolfram Alpha.
Wolfram Alpha is an amazing website. But there is also a Wolfram Alpha app. And in some ways, I think it's probably cool just to give it to the kid or show it to the kid. Again, I would say this is middle school and up. But a smart young kid might be able to use it as well. If you go the app, I can't remember what the app is on the store. I think it's maybe
$2.99.
It's not very expensive. But if you just give it to the kid and let them play around with some of the simple problems, and you see there is algebra, and it will even do graphing. And so this is a great way to experiment, to learn. And what's cool about it is, you know, these examples that I'm entering in are pre-programmed, but you can enter in your own as well. You can even enter in word problems because it understands text. So, for instance, if I typed next solar eclipse, it would tell you it's going to be June 20th. It will show you the path of the solar eclipse. It'll give you all sorts of information. Kids also will have fun saying things like, Micah. Let's see how common a name Micah is. Oh, it doesn't know how. So let's say first name. You got to type it right. Micah versus first name Leo. Let's see if it can understand my misspellings. I wish I had my keyboard, but I took it off so that we could show this. Did I get that right? All right, let's see if it'll understand that. So one of the things you can do is start typing in names. Assuming Micah female, use Micah male instead. I'm sorry, Micah.
And, that's okay.
I didn't know that. There's Mika, I think is how you pronounce it if it's a woman. And then assuming Leo male that you can. And then it compares the ranks. You're a much less common name, 1,507th. I am 50th. That means 1 in 16,000 people are named Micah.
Wow.
1 in 268 people are named Leo. There are 112 new people per year with your name. And you could see this is really awesome, the popularity of the name. Micah is the blue line you can't see. It's practically zero. But you could see with more common names how popularity rises. It was a very popular name in 1903, and it's gone down ever since. But believe it or not, Leo has started to come back up in the 2010s, oddly enough. How many people are alive today? The age distribution? Micah.
Wait, hold on.
What?
Does 1,285 people
named Micah live today in the world? In all
that's
the world.
Weird.
But
that's
isn't
weird.
That, so, and by the way, kids love doing this. So you can say first name Mary versus first name Sally or whatever. And they love playing with that. This is such a fun tool. I would start by just
so much.
It's infinite. Basically,
yeah.
It's a search engine for knowledge is, I think, the what Stephen wanted to make it. Because you can look up people, you know, we just saw the movie Harriet Tubman. This is kind of like Wikipedia in that sense. In fact, I think it pulls some information from Wikipedia. But you get pictures, you'll get a timeline. This is amazing. I wish I'd had this when I was a kid.
One of my favorite things, a lot of times it can be kind of difficult to picture numbers.
Yes.
In terms of you know, especially lengths or height or things like that. And so typing in, you know, something that is 9 yards and then it compares it. It's like 9 yards is equal to 6 zebras standing on end or 6, you know, giraffes.
I love
standing
that.
Up
That's
and
so
down.
Great.
I love being able to see that. And then there's also one of the, I think a challenge is think about like third cousin twice removed.
Yes.
It will show you a chart of who that cousin is and what
yes.
that actually means. And, you know, you could even type in your birth date and learn about what happened on that day and what, you know, what the moon was on that day. What there's just so much.
It's, by the way, it's giving me 11 divided by 29 divided by 1,956. Let's see if it figures out that I'm not doing a math problem. Yes, it's interpreting it as my birthday. It was the first day of Hanukkah in 1956. The Sand Creek Massacre happened on that day.
Wow.
the first Army-Navy football game. So this is, yeah, when was the sunrise? When was the sunset? I mean, this is just really
in a
cool
waning
stuff.
Crescent moon.
Yeah. But start with the examples. And honestly, if you've got a kid that loves to learn, maybe just let them have it. Say, you know, can I use the iPad, Daddy? Sure. Lock it in. And then just say, air. And they're going to say, oh, what is this? And I'm hoping we'll start pushing some buttons. Here is information about a 4x4x12 piece of lumber.
Piece of lumber. And I recommend watching that interview, the triangulation interview, because I ended up getting Stephen Wolfram to work with Pokemon. And so we were pulling up random Pokemon and graphing them. He was able to make an actual equation that would graph the Pokemon so that it was actually shaped like Pikachu in the graph. It was amazing.
I'm so jealous that you got to talk to him because he's legendary. And you got him to show you some neat features of Wolfram Alpha. That's so cool.
It was really cool.
Really, really cool. This is one of my favorite learning programs for kids and adults. It's just a great thing. Every iPad, every iPhone should have it. And by the way, Siri does often use Wolfram Alpha. If you ask her some certain kinds of questions, like math questions, she'll look it up on Wolfram Alpha.
Yeah, and Mr. Wolfram said that was a huge moment for them.
I bet.
Not only in terms of being plugged into that and then having their service used, but also for the sake of the search queries and things like that. So the data back was really helpful. Very cool stuff. Next, I will talk about something that could be grading for adults. But I think the point of this is to kind of let a child watch and learn, and then you kind of get to, you know, let them do their thing. And that is Marco Polo World School,
which is for little kids, obviously. Yeah.
Yes. I think it's ages 4 to 7, if I remember correctly. So a sort of specific age range, but there are more than 500 video lessons. There are 3,000 – oh, it's ages 3 to 7. 3,000-plus learning activities. Plus, it's received a bunch of different awards. So it was – for example, it has an Emmy nominee. It's received several awards from different teaching groups and things like that. It's designed by PhDs with early childhood education, you know, backgrounds. So it's a tool that – is based in science in terms of teaching kids how to teaching kids different things. So let's see here. We'll go into this, and I believe I am playing.
Oh, it's got a lot of fun sounds. It's like a busy box.
Yes, exactly.
And this is a perfect example of you're going to give this to a 4-year-old. You're definitely going to want to lock it in so that they can't.
Eastern Australia.
They don't get frustrated falling out of it. You know.
Right. Exactly.
Grizzly bears, polar bears. Hey, a koala. I'll add it to my bear journal.
Yes. So it starts to teach you different things about, for example, in this case, it's koalas. But okay, this is a little frustrating for me. Again, as I said, this is really meant to be a tappable screen for kids to just sort of exist in the space, like you said, and get to learn about different things. So there are all of these different challenges up at the top that they can go through. And it's really about sort of giving kids autonomy and letting them sort of guide their own learning.
Yeah. You know, that's the Montessori principle, which is that they let kids discover on their own. They give them projects they can work on and let them learn on their own. And I think if it's done right, it's a very powerful tool for younger children.
Now, this is it comes with a 30-day trial. And then at that point, if you choose to keep it, it becomes $9.99 a month. So about 10 bucks a month after that 30 days free.
I presume that for that, you're getting new content all the time.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, they're
this
constantly
is well done. I have to say, and you could see how they would want to. That sounds expensive. It is, but you could see if they're putting a lot of new content in all the time that it's worth it.
Absolutely, and we kind of talked about it, you can clearly tell that it is designed for those kids between the ages of 4 and 7 to be able to, or 3 and 7 to be able to sort of take this on their own and enjoy. So about the setup process. Whenever I first installed the app, then I was able to create a parent account, and then create a child account underneath the parent. So of course I named that child Leo for the sake of the show. And you can create
little
different
Leo.
Yeah, exactly. Little Leo. And then there's the parent section that lets you see your child's your child's progress, thank you, through the app. So you can see the skills that they've learned, the progress that they have come across, and then make adjustments to, you know, what are their favorite subjects and things like that. It's a very involved app, filled with different content. And like we talked about, always updating with new stuff.
I like it that you took the younger side. I seem to be taking the older kids. my next one is definitely for older kids, even kids my age. I should say this is just an example of a whole category of amazing tools for learning. This is a edx.com, and it was started by MIT and Harvard so that they could put their courses online. But now there are many, many universities that use EDX. These are free courses. You don't pay for these courses. It's EDX. And they are some of the best universities in the world and some of the best courses in the world. You see, I have a couple that I've been taking here, which are geeky things, how to write computer code. There is the world famous Harvard Introduction to Computer Science, CS50. Mm-hmm. 50. And I would say smart high school kid, this would be it moves fast, but it has what is nice about all of this. In fact, let me go back to one of the courses I'm taking because I can show you having taken it. And I, by the way, I got a certificate, and you can pay to get a certificate. I don't know how valuable that would be, but it shows your grade. It says it doesn't show your grade. It says you got a passing grade. I actually got 98. I wish it showed my A+. However, it does. This certificate could be of value. It depends on the course you take. In fact, they even have what they call master's tracks, where this is the first in a series of five or six classes. If you complete all six, you can get even a higher level degree. But let me just show you a little bit of the features of this. And this is true for the courses, although they vary because they come from different schools. This comes from the University of British Columbia. And this is the professor, Gregor Gonzalez. He teaches you, and he'll be your teacher in the course. He'll walk you through things. And so this is the syllabus. They do show you a syllabus of everything that you're going to be doing, how many hours it will take to complete it. There are practice problems. There are quizzes. There are some self-assessed quizzes, but at the end, you also get assessed by an actual TA from the university.
Wow.
So you really aren't, you know, you're not just kind of sleepwalking your way through this. If you want to, now again, you don't have to pay for it if you don't want a certificate. You can if you want to. You can download the videos to your device, which is great. You also get lecture questions. So we're going to watch the video. This is for Booleans and if expressions. This is a very early on. He'll show you as we go through it. He'll show you. Let me see. He'll show you the screen so you can watch his screen. Very legible. Very nicely done. You can both do this on a computer, or I think it works really well on the iPad. And let me just show you a quiz here so you can let's see if I can find a good quiz. Lecture questions. So, not available on mobile, so you have to do this in Safari. But that's okay. You still can do it on your iPad. It just launches the course, and now I have to log in. So let me just do that real quickly. I have to put my face in front of it. Okay. And sign in real quickly. All right. And now let's take a look at the questions. Hello. Why am I not seeing those? Well, maybe it doesn't. There we go. So then these are questions, and you actually do get to submit your answer. You can see the answer after you submit it. You get to evaluate in some of the self-evaluated ones. You get to evaluate your answer. I already answered all of these, so it's really not a good example of how to do it. But I really think they've done a great job. This is edx.org. But the point I'm saying is this is just one of many, many places you can go to get incredible college-level classes. And I think for a smart high schooler, these would be just fine. By the way, this is the one I would start with and everybody should take first, which is How to Learn Online. And again, this is free. It is a very useful course because you're going to learn how to learn. And I think this is actually hugely valuable for everybody. $50 if you want the certification. I don't know if a cert would really be worth anything, but free if you just want to do it yourself. And there's programming. There's all sorts of stuff. Languages, business and management. It is in a variety of languages. I think they've really done a wonderful job. And by the way, it's no longer just Harvard and MIT. It is schools all over the world. And so if you're looking for, you know, science programs or math or languages, there's all sorts of stuff. This is EDX. But I want to point out there's iTunes U, which is a great place to go to get other college-level courses. In fact, one of the best courses on iTunes U is Stanford's course, which they give every year on writing iOS apps. And actually, this is the old one from fall 2011, but they have a new one every year. So you should always use the newest one, obviously, because things change. Here's Core Concepts in Chemistry from Duke University. These are also free, and this is in iTunes U. The thing that blows me away is a smart kid these days could absolutely get the equivalent of a college education from the best universities in the world for absolutely nothing. Just having an iPad or almost nothing. You'd have to have the iPad and internet access, but that's all you'd need. And to me, this is the real revolution of all of this. You know, you can start a kid early on with the app you showed, Micah, and move them all the way through. I mean, look at all of the courses. These are available going even, by the way, to preschool and kindergarten. So iTunes U is an absolute must for anybody who has an app, iPad, or I guess you could do it on an iPhone. It'd be better on an iPad. You could see it uses the screen better. History, fabulous courses. I try to take a course when we travel. I've enjoyed taking courses in the country, about the country we're going to see, ancient Greece, myth, art, war. There's courses from Yale on here, the early Middle Ages. You know what? That's a good one. I'm going to take that one because I love the early Middle Ages. This is about getting out of the Roman era and into the Middle Ages. And as you can see, this is the actual college course. This is the professor in a classroom at Yale University. There is a variation in the quality of the recording and so forth, but you're getting an amazing experience. This is as if you're in the classroom. And in many cases, even with iTunes U, you have interactive resources. You could even sometimes get help from live TAs and things like that. International system in the 20th century. There's no reason to be ignorant anymore. Everything is here, right? There's no reason in the world not to... So this iTunes, EDX is an example. iTunes U is an example. Many other open courseware from MIT. Yale has its own system. And as I said, almost all universities are also on iTunes U. So my point is not any one program, although I really like edx.org and iTunes U. There's a variety of these. By the way, iTunes U also has the teaching at Apple that they used to do today, Apple that they used to do at the Apple stores. They do that at home now. And you can, this is actually a great course for teachers on using these resources. So as a parent, I mean, I'm looking for ways that you could just sit a kid down and say, and then leave. And a motivated kid. Now, sometimes kids aren't that motivated. You might want to sit down with them, spend some time, but you'll learn too. And these are so well done. If a kid is interested in computer science, CS50 at EDX is incredible, the Harvard Introduction to Computer Science. It moves very quickly. It will be very helpful if you know a lot of this course material and you can be the TA that works along with your kid. I think it's just fantastic that this stuff is available. I'm blown away. I just, we live in amazing times.
We really do.
Yeah.
It's awesome. The content that's available to us for free.
Yeah.
Speaking of being able to sit the kid down and kind of, let them go. I can't in good conscience recommend this next app in terms of a long-term choice. Unless you really, really, what I mean to say is $20 a month is expensive. And so unless you find that this app is something that you are going to really be keeping around and really wanting to use, I can't recommend it in terms of the long term. And I'm not so unaware as to think that $20 a month is reasonable in most cases. But with 2 weeks free, there are some really fun and really exciting and engaging courses from DIY.org. This app is great for two reasons. One, because it has some excellent and engaging courses. But two, because as you can see, there's a little area underneath Strange Science that says challenges done. And it actually, as you complete courses, you gain points as you're going through. So it sort of gamifies the learning process, but it makes it a lot of fun. So I don't know about you, but if there's one thing that I've seen a lot of on Instagram videos, it's slime this and slime that. I know that the Howl children have made slime multiple times, and this app has a whole bunch of different tutorials for creating your own slime. And you can see these great videos that show you exactly how to go through the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is for the YouTube generation, isn't it? And I have to say, a lot of this is on YouTube, or stuff similar is on YouTube for free. But what they're giving you here is a little more curation, a little more quality. And I mean, you're paying for the curation as much as anything else, right? I mean, I bet you if you search for slime, you could find a pretty good slime video on YouTube or two.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And you're paying for the curation. You're paying for the in-depth sort of options here. So it's not just that, you know, you're right. You can find recipes and things like that. But this really is designed from the ground up to sort of walk you through the processes. And it's not, again, Strange Science is just one. So you can learn about how to make fake poo. But in the process of learning how to make fake poo, you learn about the digestive system. You can learn about mold and create your own mold in a mold terrarium, hot and cold stuff. So how a thermos works, how a cooler works, as well as making your own light switcher. So that I can remember doing that as a kid, making a light switcher in my room where I just had a bunch of yarn and I had rigged up a pulley system we had just learned about simple machines in school. And I'd rigged up a pulley system, so that I could, from my bed, I was making the smart home before the smartphone home was around, so I could pull on the one string to turn off the light and pull on the other string to turn on the light. And there were just pieces of yarn going across my entire space. So there's a lot of stuff in here for curious kids. You know, Strange Science is just one, but there are also courses for drawing and, you know, doing camp at home. It is a really involved process, or really involved app that has so many different types of projects that you can take on. Learning how to draw, learning how to animate, learning how to invent your own machines, become a music star. I mean, it's pretty cool the different stuff that they have available in this app. And like I said, the way that they gamify it by having you, you know, gain points as you go through and complete these different challenges, including the featured challenges like dressing as a witch or wizard, which of course you can see is a very easy challenge.
That's cute.
And then some that are 15 minutes or less and things like that. So this
must be done by educators. For this price, you've got to have, this is basically courseware.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So again, that's DIY.org with a 2-week trial. You know, give it a go at least.
Yeah.
Give it a chance to see the different stuff that's available, and you might find that you've got a kid that really digs into it and starts completing all these challenges, and then you can make the choice after that if the $20 a month is something that you want to keep around.
Well, I think we should take a break. This is, I mean, we have a lot more, but I don't think we're...
I think that covers it in terms of...
It gives you enough to chew on to get started. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to your news, your questions, and our app caps in just a little bit. But first, a word from our sponsor. We're sitting here in the beautiful LastPass Studios in beautiful, the beautiful east side of Petaluma. We love LastPass. LastPass, our sponsor, is the ultimate password vault, but it's really so much more these days, and I think it's important to kind of take a look at it. I hope you're using LastPass at home. They have three versions. There's LastPass Premium for the individual, LastPass Family, that's what we use at our house, which has some nice features I could share with Lisa, passwords and so forth. We can have a folder where all the family passwords are, so she has access to the passwords she needs for things like the utility bills and so forth. And there's even an emergency access feature that lets you designate a family member or not. I could make it Micah, but I'm not gonna. So if anything should happen to me, that person would have access to my passwords so that they could settle my affairs, things like that. That's the family version of LastPass. There's also LastPass Enterprise. And if you're a business and you're not using LastPass, I really want to talk to you because LastPass is so important. We started using LastPass Enterprise a few years ago when one of our employees put all of his passwords, including passwords to our web servers and our databases, on a public web page because he could never remember them. Employees do silly things with passwords. They really do. They, I know. That was my reaction. No! Employees will put them on post-it notes on the screen. You remember, what was it, War Games, where they had the password under the blotter at the school so he could change his grades. There's a lot of dumb things people do with passwords. LastPass helps them do the right thing. And with all your employees going home and working from home in many cases, it becomes even more important. The beauty of LastPass, it can be deployed quickly in the midst of any event to make sure your business keeps running smoothly and every login is secure no matter where it comes from. They have more than passwords, though. Single sign-on is such a great thing. Our employees love it. Over 1,200 apps. Instead of having to know a password, you just approve the login. You get a message on your phone, press a button, and you're in. And that is, believe it or not, both more secure and more convenient. Usually that doesn't compute. It's one or the other. It's more secure, more convenient. And using SSO means IT always has insight into who has access to what and where they're accessing it from. That's great. Of course, they've got the best password management, enterprise-level password management. And from my point of view, what enterprise in this context means that you've got oversight of shadow IT, you've got enforceable policies across all password-protected accounts. We, for instance, require two-factor. We have minimum requirements for the master password, things like that. They've also added multi-factor authentication, more than just biometrics like Touch ID or Face ID. They have things like contextual things like geolocation, IP address, and more. That makes it easier, again, easier for employees, but safer for you. You know that the person who's supposed to be accessing that and no one else is accessing that account. Businesses have to think about additional layers of defense beyond the password. And that's why LastPass does so many things right. For instance, and we, by the way, we went through this with Steve Gibson. He looked at all the code with Joe Segrist, and Steve uses it now, which gives you some idea, our security guy. LastPass never sends or stores the master password. No reason for that? If LastPass can't access your data, hackers can't access your data. The encryption is always at device level and only at device level. It's encrypted before sent to LastPass, only decrypted on the device, and every device, by the way, Android, iOS, Windows, Mac, Linux, there's browser plugins for all the browsers. And it's all encrypted with military-grade 256-bit AES, the best you can get. LastPass protects while providing a seamless workflow for your employees. It's both secure and convenient. And with employees distributed now, they're all at home or in different places, it's nice that they can share passwords securely with other employees, or you can. In fact, we have folders for all the different departments, and when we onboard a new employee, we just give them access to that folder. It makes it really, really easy and still secure. MFA, SSO, the best password management in the world, it's LastPass. LastPass can help make remote work simple and secure. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help your business stay productive and secure no matter what happens. LastPass.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of iOS today. On we go with the show, with the news, and here he is, the newsman of the hour, Mikey Sargent.
Folks, iOS 13.5
came Wednesday.
It came Wednesday.
It didn't do it. We thought it would do it last week, but the day after.
Was the day after. iOS 13.5 introduces a couple of new things. People are calling it the COVID-19 update because it includes the API for contact tracing and also a new feature that makes it easy. I don't know about you, but I have kind of been missing Touch ID a little bit lately because I've been...
I have an iPhone SE. I'm golden.
Oh, nice. Nice. See, I've been out and about on occasion, very rare occasions,
to go to the store. Yeah, when you're wearing your mask, it can't recognize you.
Can't see your face.
I got a fingerprint reader.
You got
I
a Touch
that.
ID, yeah. you turkey. But I do not have Touch ID, nor am I a turkey. And so I am happy that now the Face ID technology can see, or it can predict, or it can tell if you have a mask on in most cases. And if it does, then it automatically presents you with the option to type in your code. So instead of it going, nope, not you, nope, not you, nope, not you, and then finally presenting the option to type in your code, it will just do it automatically. Unfortunately, I don't know, I use a very long code because of Face ID being the way that I normally log in. So it still takes me a while to get in. But, you know, security, folks, security.
The other thing they added is this new COVID-19 API for contact tracing. And I want to show you where this is. I was really hoping I could show you last week, but it came on Wednesday. But you have it if you've updated to 13.5. Go into your settings, and you're going to go to your privacy settings. Mm-hmm. And in there, there's health. And this is where the COVID-19 exposure logging, if you have the new 13.5, you'll have this new entry. Read it because it's important. When enabled, iPhone can exchange random IDs with other devices using Bluetooth. This allows an app to notify you if you may have been exposed to COVID-19. Now, the point is an app has to be written. In fact, if I try to turn this on, I can't. It says you can't turn it on without an authorized app installed that can send exposure notifications. So you may check with your state or your locality to see if they have an app, with your country to see if they have an app. And once they do, you'll see it here, installed app. You can see all the requests to check your exposure log. You can delete your exposure log. You have a lot of control over it. So that's all in this area in health and privacy. The COVID-19 exposure logging. Now, I think there are some states using the Apple Google. This is the Apple Google API. I'm not sure.
So
is it North Dakota's using it? I can't remember.
I've got a great article that everybody needs to check out. And it's from Zach Hall at 9to5Mac. Zach has been a guest on Tech News Weekly a couple of times. And he has decided, thank goodness, to put together an article that he's keeping updated that shows the responses from different states, including those who say they will be participating, those who have yet to respond, and those who say that they are not participating, of which California currently says, we don't have any updates on apps at this time, but if that changes, we will let you know. He's regularly reaching out to folks in these different states and seeing, I can't remember who he's talking to exactly.
Alabama, North Dakota, South Carolina, and Virginia have all indicated that they will participate. That's only four states.
Four states.
And it looks like South Dakota has their own app. North Dakota says they will be using it. So this is really a good thing to read, is each state and their plans. Part of the problem, I think the states are concerned about privacy. Sometimes they want more ability than the Apple Google API will allow them. For instance, the Apple Google API will not let any state or government exfiltrate the information, download the information about who you've run into that might have COVID-19. They would like to do in-person contact tracing. It doesn't give them that information, so they cannot. And many countries have complained about that. France has. And many states seem to be not too happy about that. So I wonder if states might do their own apps so that they can get that information. Because it turns out, and I think we all agree that Steve Gibson did a great piece on this a couple of weeks ago, that human, and Bruce Schneier's written about it as well, human contact tracing is really the only thing that ultimately is going to work. And right. So an app can help, but the Apple app cannot, in fact, help because only the app can do the contact tracing. And Schneier's point is no app is going to do a very good job of this. You really need those human tracers. That's what the countries that have done this successfully, like China, Taiwan, South Korea, they've all done this successfully. In fact, reduced the number of infections to zero or just a little bit more by doing this kind of, you know, in-person testing and tracing. Very important to do both. And so I think that there's a sense that maybe the Apple app is a good idea, that what Apple and Google did made sense, but it just doesn't go far enough and it won't be effective enough to do what everybody wants to do, which is go back to normal. To do that, right. You need extensive testing and contact tracing. It's just the only way until we get a vaccine. So I think that's probably part of the problem. Anyway, you have it. Doesn't look like any app's going to use it.
Yeah, that's a frustrating thing. Yeah. I also say I'm a little frustrated. A family member perusing the internet came across a video that was published shortly after contact tracing was added to iOS and Android devices in recent updates, with utter lies and falsehoods. This video was full of utter lies and falsehoods, and it's really frustrating when you know how the technology works and when someone just completely says something that's utterly and completely false.
It doesn't share your address book. It doesn't share information.
It doesn't have GPS.
It doesn't share location. And in fact, all of those protections, which people like for privacy, are the reason that many states and many governments don't want to use it.
Yeah.
It's not that they want to spy on you. It's just that in-person contact tracing really is required. It's the only thing that works. And it's been shown again and again in a great many countries to work. I don't know if we'll ever get it here, but, you know, and that's part of the problem is people are very privacy focused. And I understand that. And it does seem invasive if, you know, you go to a clinic, you get tested positive. The clinic sits you down and says, all right, you need to tell us everywhere you've been in the last 14 days. Mm-hmm. And you need to tell us everybody you've talked to, and then goes out and starts calling those people and say, Leo tested positive. You've been exposed to him. You have to go into quarantine for 14 days. That's a tough thing to do in the United States. The countries that do that, it's worked. It's succeeded. It's very effective, but it's a tough thing to do in the U.S. And maybe in other countries as well. So.
Based on some of the reactions I've seen,
people don't like that idea.
Just wearing face masks, speaking of privacy and desire for more of it, Ars Technica just published an article on the 21st talking about a court decision that sort of could set precedent that suggests that just turning on your phone qualifies as searching it. So it used to be that location data and sort of deeper access to a phone's data and activity required a search warrant. And this court has ruled that even unlocking the device, you know, powering up the lock screen requires a search warrant now. And of course, you know, as it always goes, one simple decision is not the be all end all, but it does start to set precedent, and it does start to, I think, sort of reopen the conversation, if not just add to the conversation surrounding how much protection we should have when it comes to our devices, which in many cases store more personal information than even our own brains do, which is one thing that, of course, we are protected from self-incrimination. So I find this to be to continually be an interesting conversation, especially when we look at how companies implement certain safeguards. like me squeezing the two volume buttons and the side button at the same time to turn off Face ID, so that if I was in a situation where I did not want, you know, a law officer to get access to my phone by saying, look at your phone, you have to look at your phone to unlock it, then I can squeeze those buttons to sort of deactivate Face ID and make it so that unlocking the device requires typing in my passcode, which you may or may not have more of a chance of, you know, saying, I'm not going to do that. I find this fascinating. I don't know about you, Leo.
Yeah. Well, what a world. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a whole lot to add to the conversation. This is just one more step sort of on that side of things where, you know, is it or is it not the same thing? And is it protected by the Fourth Amendment? Yeah. I don't know. I think this law stuff is fascinating. And I guess we'll see how this plays out.
The problem is this court and no one court except for the U.S. Supreme Court has jurisdiction everywhere. So, right. You know, well, I guess that's not true. I mean, if there are federal courts that have jurisdiction everywhere, but there are conflicting opinions. That's the real problem.
Yes.
Courts don't always agree. And, you know, this particular decision applies, I guess, to Washington State. But I don't know if it applies to the rest of us. So it's just unclear.
Yeah, I think it's because it had to do with the FBI, and so that's where it kind of can gain more national attention. And up to this point, you know, there's been the rule that I don't have to hand over my PIN, but the FBI just used what was on the lock screen for evidence. Right. And so that is kind of should we be protecting the lock screen as well? Do we have that right under the Fourth Amendment?
Yeah,
I just think it's interesting.
Yeah.
One last bit of news, a super quick one. I know you weren't a huge fan of Mythic Quest. I also wasn't a huge fan of Mythic Quest.
One of the Apple TV Plus shows.
Yes. Yeah. However, I watched the Mythic Quest quarantine episode, and I thought it was kind of
a quarantine episode?
They did, yes. So the whole thing of the show is that it is a game studio that produces this MMORPG, massively multiplayer online role-playing game. And you have different people. You've got the creative, you've got the boss who's sort of not the boss, and the head developer and all these different people. And so it sort of shows all of these. It's a comedy. And they are showing how they are developing the game while working from home because of the quarantine. One of the characters, the main character, she is Australian and she's the lead developer. And, you know, you'd think the whole thing is just going to be a funny thing, but it also shows her struggles of being so far away from home while this is going on and sort of being alone and how she was using work to distract herself from that sadness and the struggle of not being able to be with the people that, you know, she cares about. And so it had some very real moments and it had some very clever moments, including some Rube Goldberg machining that took place. And so it ended up being really cool, but it raised $600,000 for charity, which is really great. And then also the team, the way that they filmed this was that everybody used iPhones to film. So there were 40 iPhones, 20 sets of earbuds, and they had, I think it was about a week, if I remember correctly, three weeks. And they had shot, edited it, and were ready to air it to make it happen. And so it's really well done.
I will watch it. Okay.
You should. I think you should. Yeah. That was really good. But I love the idea that they shot this on iPhone, and I love the way that the older man character, he's trying to figure out how to use the, you know, Skype or Slack or whatever it happens to be, and he ends up FaceTiming the woman, and then suddenly the video gets shut off, and he's calling her, and he even at one point has an Animoji character. It's really funny. So anyway.
F. Murray Abraham plays that part.
Thank you.
He's so good, yeah.
He is really good. Yeah. The Hollywood Reporter has the whole rundown on everything, and it's a sort of question interview. So you get to see all of the people talking about how this went from concept to reality. So I think it's a really fascinating read, and kind of, I don't know, anytime I read those kinds of things, it makes me feel creative and makes me want to create. So it was a really energizing article that, when paired with the, you know, watching the episode, sort of those two went together quite well. And I don't know, just it brought my spirits up altogether. And so I liked it a lot. You know what else we like a lot?
Take a break, because we're going to talk about my beautiful iPhone SE that I got from my beautiful sponsor, Mint Mobile. I love Mint Mobile. Thank you, Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile is, you know, the most amazing wireless company because they don't charge as much as the other guys do, because they don't have the expensive retail stores. They do it all online. With Mint Mobile, I'm paying $25 a month. You can pay even less, just $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan. And you're getting the same quality service you get from the big boys. You're just paying a lot less. Unlimited nationwide talk and text, crazy fast 4G LTE. You can bring your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan. Keep the same number, port it right over all your contacts. You can switch now to Mint Mobile and get premium wireless for $15 a month. And don't worry, if you're not 100% satisfied, 7-day money-back guarantee. So it's really worth trying Mint Mobile. They had a great deal on the iPhone. Now, the $15 a month deal for 3 months, I highly recommend. But I did it, and I said, wow, this is so good. I am going to go and get a year. And I decided I wanted 12 gigabytes of data a month. 12. And unlimited nationwide talk and text. I thought, well, how much is that going to cost me? It costs me less than a third when I'm pairing the other guys. $300 for a year, that's $25 a month. That's why I gladly bought the year. What a great deal. $25 a month, unlimited nationwide text, talk, and 12 gigabytes of data, which, by the way, I've never gone through, not once. So it's nice to have. And I got this great iPhone SE. I told you I really like the fingerprint reader. The size is great. This does everything. It's just as fast. I really like this iPhone SE. This is the new iPhone SE, and I got a great deal from Mint Mobile. So check it out, mintmobile.com/iOS. Get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan. They'll ship you the SIM, the entire plan, to your door for free, contactless. You can put it in your existing phone. Or they also sell phones like the iPhone SE at a really good price. mintmobile.com/iOS. mintmobile.com/iOS. Check it out for yourself, for family, for friends. You know, my father-in-law, it's just a great, kids, it's just a great choice. And I think, honestly, the iPhone SE is a great companion to Mint Mobile. I'm really happy with it. mintmobile.com/iOS. All right, let's get some questions from our fine audience members here.
All righty. Our first question comes from Adam from Iowa. Love the show. I've realized that I need to up my security on my internet accounts, and based on information about the YubiKey that Leo has shared in the past, I decided to go that route.
Okay.
I've noticed that some of my accounts don't offer the ability to use a security key.
No.
Instead, they offer the use of an app to generate codes. Do you have any suggestions or advice on which app you prefer for this?
So let me tell you what I use, and then Micah, you can tell them what you use. Yeah, YubiKey has an app, but actually, I really like Authy, AUTHY. This comes from a company called Twilio, and it's iOS, it's Android, it even has a desktop app. And it's one of those desktop authenticators, gives you a 6-digit code every 30 seconds. And you can see I have a lot of accounts in here. In my opinion, a YubiKey or a physical hardware token is only slightly more secure than an authenticator app. The reasoning is that in both cases, it's the second factor is something you have, either a physical key that you have on your keychain, in your pocket, in your desk drawer, or a phone, and the app running on your phone. If you've got good security on your phone, and you do if you're using iOS, that app is, you know, just as secure probably as a YubiKey. It's generating a six-digit code, which you have to type in. The YubiKey, you plug in to a port on the phone. So that's another drawback, by the way, with a YubiKey. It's not going to work on every kind of hardware. I got a special YubiKey 5CI that has both a lightning port on one side and a Type-C connector on the other side. So it pretty much works with everything, including the iPhone and the iPad. But it's expensive. If you lose it, you're going to have a problem. So you have to get at least two of them, put one of them in a safe place. I think an authenticator app for most people, maybe tiny, tiny bit less secure because you could lose your phone. Maybe somebody could get into it. I think it's just as secure and it's free. So Authy is my favorite, and I'll tell you why. Actually, this is no longer the case for Google Authenticator, but for a long time with Google Authenticator, you didn't have an account. So if you got a new phone, if you had to wipe your phone and you got a new phone, you'd have to set up your two-factor all over again, which usually means going to each account, turning it off, getting a new two-factor QR code, putting it in the new app. Google just recently updated Authenticator so that you can save your codes, which means that you can then install a new phone with Authenticator and restore. That's what Authy has done for years. It's one of the reasons I like Authy is you set it up once. It synchronizes to an account on Twilio. It's encrypted. You use a long encryption code to, you know, decrypt it. I think it's fairly safe. That maybe makes it a little bit less safe because there is another place those codes exist outside of your phone. So, you know, that reduces the security a little bit. I trust Twilio. I trust Google. So Microsoft Authenticator does the same thing. That's another great tool that will do it. The worst case scenario, and unfortunately there are still places that do this, chiefly banks. The worst case scenario is that second factor is a text message to your phone. As we've talked about many times before, text messages are not secure. So there's a real disadvantage. At least whenever you can use an authenticator app, if you want to use a physical dongle like a YubiKey, and there are many other companies that make these, but YubiKey's the best known, that may be slightly more secure. But then there's a much higher cost. These are expensive, and you need at least two of them, which means, you know, it's even a higher cost and a little more complicated to set up. I like the feeling of having a physical hardware key. The other thing to keep in mind is if you're using a physical key or an authenticator app, it's a good idea to turn off all other forms of two-factor. Because if, and this is the case in many situations, there's a backup with the second factor where the bad guy could send a text message to your phone. Those are easily hijacked. Then that's the weakest link in the chain. You don't have the full security of an authenticator app or a YubiKey. So I do recommend using, I think an authenticator app is fine. I use Authy. What do you use, Micah?
I started to use Authy per your recommendation after, for a long time, I just used the password manager to do it, but you recommended separating those two and doing that as a separate one. So yeah, I started using Authy at that point.
Google, thank goodness, has added that synchronization feature. There's a guy in the Twit community who said, I feel so bad. He's, I lost access to my Twitter account because I turned on two-factor and then my phone died and I didn't have my authentication tokens. And so the other thing to keep in mind is you should always print a paper backup. Whenever you do two-factor, they usually will say, okay, now here's some recovery codes that you can use just in case something goes wrong. Print those. Put them in a safe place because you don't want to be caught in that situation where you didn't have the backup codes, you lost the authenticator, and now all of a sudden you can't get into your account. That wouldn't be good. We have a video question. Shall I play it?
Please do.
Oh, how exciting. I want more of these. He does a little magic trick in this too, I might add, so you want to watch carefully. Here we are at the Johns Hopkins University Library.
Hi, Leo, Micah. I've been doing a lot of exercise since the stay-at-home order was issued. I want to measure how many total miles I've done since March. How could I export my Apple Watch data in a readable format? Something I could calculate in a Google spreadsheet on iOS. Thanks. Appreciate the show.
I think there's a fountain in that library.
Yeah. I hope that's what that is, a fountain.
Yeah. So I love it because it becomes apparent pretty soon that it's a green screen because, well, actually, it's apparent right at the beginning because you see the library and then he just boop, pops in. And then at the end, he moves over and pops out. So that's quite cute. I don't know the answer to this. I hope you do. Can you export your data?
Yes. So there is an app that works very well. Let's see. So there's the Quantified Self Project. And the Quantified Self Project is this online system for basically creating your quantified self. And it is paired with, you can pair it with the Quantified Self app. And that lets you make it's called QS Access, which I will include a link in the show notes to QS Access. It's a free app. And what it lets you do is export your content in a machine readable and human readable format. I guess I removed it from my phone here, so I can't show it as easy. Let me see where I have that, because I want to show you how simple it is to export data from it. But it essentially lets you – I don't know why I removed it. But you go through and you select the measurements that you want to add to your to the information. You can export it into a numbers document, an Excel document, basically anything that's a comma-separated value reader. So you can see all of that information, plug it into Google Sheets, however you want, and graph that data. And the Quantified Self service is what makes that possible. So let me send you that link, Leo, so that if you want to pull it up, you can. But it is a very helpful app. Here, I'll put it in there as well. Again, free to download. It doesn't have very good ratings, and I'm not sure why.
But you used it and it worked.
Yeah, I've used it and it works. In fact, I have a folder on my Mac that's backed up to, you know, cloud storage, where I just have my Quantified Self exported information. So it's all stored there. And I can easily see the information that's, you know, that's available to me that I have slowly.
And can you export it out as a comment separated value CSV file? Yeah. So that means you can import it into anything: Excel, numbers, R. They say R, which is the statistical programming language. So if you're really into the quantified self, that's great. You can get all that health information out. I wonder if Apple has. They must have an API to do that. I don't know.
Yeah, so there you can export directly from Apple Health, and it creates a zip file that has it has an XML format in it. But the problem is,
so this parses that.
Yeah, the problem is that it exports it as a it's called a CDA, which is a health document that a lot of people don't have or services that can read CDA files. And so, yeah, it's a little bit different. It doesn't work the exact same way as just a simple CSV. So, yes, essentially QS reads that data and exports it as a CSV instead. So I've got steps in here. I've got distance in here. And this goes back as far as I have been using the device. That's too big a file, so I can't see it. Let me see if I can read the steps one, because I want to check the starting date. And it goes all the way back to the beginning of ever since I started tracking, you know, since HealthKit has been available basically on my device. So 24th of August 2016 is the first bit of data, and it goes all the way, of course, now to today. That file is a 7.2 megabyte file, so it's got quite a bit of information in there, even though it's just text. And it shows, you know, when it started tracking to when it finished tracking. It's got, you know, all that information. So yeah, if you want to be a data nerd and see all that information, then this is the way to do it. So again, that's QS Access on the App Store. And like I said, it's available for free. Not sure again why it has 3-star ratings, except that maybe people wanted it to do more than just export CSVs. They wanted to graph it too. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, so, if for the geeky and nerdy amongst us, you know, you could roll your own. There is
absolutely
a Python library, PyCDA, for instance, that will convert it into the XML into CSVs. So you can easily write your own little.
That's so funny that you, this is how I found QS Access was, I was wanting to see how I could read my CDA files, and I found those Python scripts documented online. Yeah. And then I found QS and I thought, okay, this is a little bit simpler.
No, it's good. It's good. Learn. Yeah. You don't, I mean, if you're a coder, you can do it. Mm-hmm. As soon as you said it's XML, I thought, oh, okay, well, we can write a little utility to convert the XML to CSV. That's not so hard. You notice I'm wearing a hat, and it makes me want to say, how would you like a big Hawaiian punch? I am wearing my Hawaiian punch hat. You are wearing, oh, my goodness.
If only I had dreads.
You need to be filling that hat. You look good in that. We are wearing silly hats, which you can't see if you're listening, but take our word for it.
I promise you we are wearing silly hats.
For one and only one reason, it's time for our app caps.
Yes. These are our picks of the week, the apps that we love to use and love to share with all of you.
And you look good in that hat. I just love that on you.
I should have pulled out my pirate wig that I have, because it's basically dreads.
It's to hold your dreads, to keep them up for
So my app is an app that's available in the App Store free with in-app purchases, and it is called Concepts. So last week we talked about apps to use with your Apple Pencil, and I didn't bring up Concepts at the time, and I kind of wish I would have, because I ended up reopening this app and I realized how awesome it is and how it is essentially the thing that I like to have, which is an unlimited workspace on iOS. So let me switch my screens here so you can see. This is the sort of way that I chose to do it. I'm using the free version. This is not the pro version or anything like that. And I want to start by showing how you can change the grid form that you have here. So I could change it to dark print or brown. You know, I could change the type of paper, make it completely dark if I want to. I love dot grid. I don't know if you've noticed that about me, but I really love dot grid. At 10, 100, 16, 64, and isometric, if you'd like to. There's scales. There's the type of units that you're using. So the iPad setting for inches, the point setting, inches, millimeters, and specific unit. So this can get super in-depth to create actual, you know, drawn to scale measurements of items. This is a tool that can be used by someone who's doing architectural drawings just as much as it can be used by someone who just wants to take notes on their device. And I'm going to change my my iPad to that new form that we learned last week, where you sort of slide your iPad in between the keyboard and the trackpad. There are options for, you know, your Apple Pencil or whatever stylus you happen to have. So there's different pressure responses. And then you can change what your finger does based on what you do with the Apple Pencil. And then what the double tap on the side does to change which mode. So in this case, it shows the color wheel. And this is really cool. The gestures too. But this is really cool. When I double tap that button, it will, well, maybe not. Oh, wait, that's because I have this. Okay, let me.
If you'll forgive me, what is this for?
There we go.
Now wow.
Yeah. So check out. So these are
Copic like paint
colors.
Chips.
Yeah. These are actual colors that correspond to real colors in real life. So think about. So for me, I just like it as an endless screen on which I can take notes. Or like I said, if I'm working on some sort of a woodworking project or something like that, and I want to do measurements and sketch out, okay, you know, I need to have, and this is not precisely drawn, but I need to have, you know, 12 2x4s, and I can start to take measurements and set up exactly what I'm looking for. Again, horrible.
So it's almost like a blueprint program kind of.
It can be. Yeah. I mean, you can have it set up as a blueprint. You can have it just as your journal. It's up to you.
Yeah.
What you want to do with it. It's just a notebook, but it is a very well done notebook that can be a powerful tool for folks who are looking for something that's super precise. And so again, those Copic colors, think about an interior designer who is sketching out the new layout for their living room, for the client's living room.
You have to use real colors. You can't.
Exactly. They correspond to actual swatches. And then check this out. The import option. There are options for different symbols that are within.
I like that. Do you have to?
But then,
do you have to pay for that?
Those ones, yes. Those some of the symbols you do pay for.
Is that
some of the
Stephanie
stuff is
from HR?
Check it out. It's Stephanie Studebaker. I can bring Stephanie into the document from corporate, exactly, and start to make some notes on Stephanie. So you look, this starts to become a scrapbook.
I like it that it has the predefined shapes. I think because I'm a terrible artist, as we've discussed, and having those shapes means I can do all sorts of stuff. Does it have? Look at all of them. I have electronic symbols and things like that. These, I would guess, I pay for, right?
Yes. Okay. Check this out. Yeah. See these? Yeah. It's your own.
So if you're doing circuit diagrams, that'd be great for program flow.
On car.
Oh, this is really cool.
Some UI stuff. Now, this is the cool thing about it, too. Oh, look, check that out. I can make an Apple Pencil. Let me see if I can sample it. Not Apple Pencil. Golly gee. I guess I can't drop it in. I just
so there are higher end programs like this that a lot of pros use. Look at that. Wow.
The golden ratio. Okay. Now, there are two options in this. You can buy individual packs, but it also has a subscription option.
Oh.
And so by paying the subscription, then you get access to these different tools and objects that are available in here. And they're always adding new objects. And so, you know, you can start to see some
really cool
options.
How much is the subscription?
Let's see.
I might use that. I might do that. That's pretty cool.
The subscription is, why don't I have it anymore? Let me pull up the concepts thing. I thought I wrote that down, but I guess I didn't. It is $7.99
a month.
Yes.
But if you use this professionally, that'd be well worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this is, and now you've seen my private relay Apple ID for this. But if folks are wondering what in the world that is, this has sign in with Apple, which is a way to set up individual accounts for different apps. And so I've set up an individual account for this so that Stephanie Studebaker.
Studebaker can use it.
Can use
to find that wily hacker.
And there are lots of different options, of course, for changing the brushes. So, you know, you get the dynamic pen or the wire if you want. There's hard pencils and soft. I mean, it's got all your tools that you might want. And look, there's a brush market if you want to add some different options there for pastels and pencil sketches. So if you think about this as an all-purpose tool for every kind of artist or scrapbooker, in my case, then you can understand why someone might be interested in concepts. And in fact, the web page for this, let me go over here to the App Store so you can kind of see one option for what this would be used for, because I think it does give you a good idea of why someone would want to use concepts.
Nice.
So check this out. I mean, product design.
Yeah.
Sketching.
Cartooning. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Some illustrations, but as well as fashion design.
Oh, yeah.
Check that out. Products.
Yeah.
Ooh, is that a new iPod or AirPod? And then here you go. This is what I was talking about before with architecture.
Yeah, yeah.
So it can do things to scale. Oh, it's a ray gun.
There are a lot of programs that do this, but this one is more freeform than most. I like it.
The infinite canvas. That's my big thing. That is what I want more than. There are a lot of sketchbook apps out there that don't have that option. Just say, okay, I'm done with this. Let me move over to this next section. Okay, I'm done with that.
It's paginated or something. Yeah. This is just open. Yeah. As it should be. Yeah.
Oh, and it's got layers too.
Nice. Concept. I like it. You can try it for free. So you get a really good sense of what's going on and then buy what you need.
And there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot available for free in it, which is really great. And it continues. It's got a 4.7 rating and has maintained that high rating for as long as it's been in the App Store. Number 36 in graphics and design in the App Store. So that's concepts. And what
that's
you
concepts, man. Now we're going to show you something really cool. A couple weeks ago when we were actually, it was last week, I guess, when we talked about brain programs, I mentioned Sudoku, which is a great math app to, you know, a math puzzle to get your numbers side of your brain working. And I mentioned I use the app from Sudoku.com. Then I saw this, and I don't know. Do you like Sudoku? Are you?
I like crosswords, but I'm
yeah,
not a big,
you're more verbal. That's why you should do it, though, because you got to expand your numbers.
That's true.
I saw this. This was a viral video called The Miracle Sudoku. It came from a channel called Cracking the Cryptic. And this blew my mind. It features Simon Anthony, who is a former UK team member on the Sudoku Championships.
Okay.
And it's making the rounds. Everybody's talking about it. It's called The Miracle Sudoku. I recommend it. I won't play it because it's a surprise. But he uses an app in there to solve his Sudokus. I thought, boy, I would love those features. Well, it turns out the Cracking the Cryptic guys have made their own Sudoku app. It's called Classic Sudoku. It's one of those sideways things, so I'm going to show you. But I have to say, they've done a really good job. Now,
what?
It's $5, and you don't get like an infinite number of puzzles, so it's a little pricey. And I guess there's more puzzles that come out every week and stuff like that. You get enough puzzles,
good.
But I think that the solver, the tools they give you, are so interesting. So I've just started playing with this. This is a puzzle by Thomas Snyder. He's Dr. Sudoku. He's the one-time world puzzle champion, three-time world Sudoku champion. Unlike the other Sudoku tools, you said you like the notes, but it has notes in the corners. It has notes in the middle. It also has a very useful color feature, and this is what I saw them use on the Cracking the Cryptic, and I said, I have to have that. With this, you can color, for instance, let's see, if I'm saying I'm trying to figure out where all the ones might go. Well, there's a one is going to have to go there, and it looks like because there's a one there, there's going to have to be a one there, and there's going to be a one maybe on these. You see, I'm coloring them as I go. I don't need one there, there, or there. And then this means there can only be a one there. As you see, I'm solving the Sudoku. But what I'm actually doing is I'm just coloring squares to say this is where I can put my ones. Now, I've colored all the ones. I can, if I want now, just put the one in all of those squares, which makes that very easy.
Oh.
Yeah. There's also some advantage to seeing the puzzle this way. It gives you ideas. For instance, I know one has to be in this column, right? So that would eliminate ones in other squares. It turns out I don't have to worry about that, but it gives you additional features. There's additional buttons that are really great. This is the actual draw a one button, so we'll do that, put that in there. It gives you lots of additional information. You have choices of colors in here. Undo. It's got a timer. You can get hints. I think this is kind of the Sudoku solver for people who are really serious about Sudoku. And I love it that it ties into the Cracking the Cryptic channel, where some of the smartest Sudoku solvers exist. So I am going to now make this my pick for the best Sudoku game.
Wow.
On the iPad, replacing Sudoku.com. I'm very fond of classic Sudoku. It is $5. It's not free. But I'll tell you, if you start watching these guys working these puzzles on Cracking the Cryptic, you'll start wanting to do it the way they do it. They are really good at it. If you haven't seen the Miracle Sudoku, go see that on YouTube. It's 25 minutes well spent. It's a mind boggler, and it may make you interested in the whole concept. And
for me, it's a reminder of my middle school talented and gifted classes that I, you know, where basically you'd start the day every day whenever you went to this class with Sudoku, and then you do a brain training, and you do this and you do that.
You hate it.
So it just kind of got grueling.
Yeah. Well, to me, Sudoku is not about numbers. I think people think it's about numbers. It's not. There's no math involved at all. It's a logic puzzle.
Right, exactly.
And really it tests your ability to make logical inferences from a situation. And so it's about building logic. I think it's really fun. It isn't, you know, don't worry, there's no math involved. But honestly, if you want to get excited about Sudoku, I would go to Cracking the Cryptic and watch that one on the Miracle Sudoku puzzle, because wow. Wow. Then you'll have an appreciation for the whole thing. That is it for iOS today. Why do I always pick hats I can't wear headphones with? You know, there's something there. I do like this hat, though. I might wear it for the rest of the day.
There you go.
How would you like a big Hawaiian punch?
Boing! You're going to get it. You're going to hear about it.
Did you ever see those ads, or is that really old?
Oh, no, I remember those.
You do? Okay.
Whew. Yeah.
Yes. I don't know. Does Hawaiian Punch still exist?
I hope not. It's, I think, not, it was just sugar and red food coloring.
It's expensive Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
So anyway, but it's delicious. It's delicious.
Yeah,
it did
taste good.
It's delicious. Mm. I got to say that.
I got to say it's delicious.
Micah Sargent is the host of Smart Tech Today with Matthew Castanelli, and of Tech News Weekly with our friend Jason Howell, and of course, the host of
Hands on iOS
Today. Oh, and I forgot Hands on iOS, where you do a lot of... I feel like now I'm just going to be the dummy on this show, and you can show me how to do everything.
I'm going to be doing an episode on the contact tracing stuff soon. So
that'll be interesting. See if you can get an app. Find an app that
works.
Yes,
exactly. That is exactly what I'm on the lookout for. So it'll be
we
next.
Do iOS Today every Tuesday, 9 a.m. Pacific. That's noon Eastern time. That's 1600 UTC. If you want to watch or listen live, you can go to twit.tv/live or ask your device. Let me see if I can get my device over here and say, hey, device, play Twit Live. And sometimes it will, sometimes it won't. That's just the way these devices are. By the way, you can also ask it to play any podcast. You could say, hey, device, play iOS Today podcast and listen to the most recent episode, which won't be today's yet. We have to edit it a lot. And then we'll put it out. When we do put it out, it'll be available at the website, twit.tv/iOS. There's also...
By the way, the mic is on mute. To turn it back on, press the button on the back of Google Home.
I know. Thank you. What does mute mean? Tell me what mute means. It means shut up.
How does it know that you were talking to it?
By the way, helpful little bugger. you know, it's gotten to that point, isn't it? At first, these were little miracles that you could talk to and they'd answer. But it didn't take long before we started to go, you jerk, shut up.
Yeah. Stop talking.
I'm working here. You can find us on YouTube. Best thing to do, though, get a podcast application and subscribe. And yes, I know Joe Rogan got $100 million to be on Spotify. We're on it for free. So you can listen there. You can listen on TuneIn. You can listen on Stitcher and Slacker, Pocket Casts, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. We're everywhere. Just find a podcast app. Yes. On Joe's little podcast app, whatever it is, find iOS Today. Press the subscribe button. It costs you nothing. That way it'll automatically download it. It's even better than YouTube. It'll actually download it and it'll be there. And you could be in the middle of nowhere and you just press play and we'll play for you. Audio or video, you get the choice. Now, Micah, I loved it that we got a video. How can people send us their video questions?
Yeah, you send that to iostoday@twit.tv.
There's some debate in the chat room, irc.twit.tv, whether that was a fountain in the background or whether the dog came in and started drinking its water.
Oh, that's not a bad option.
If we were a really big dog, it might have sounded like a fountain.
It could also have been like a cat fountain.
It could have been any number of things. We may never know.
This is true.
Send us your video. We'll be talking about you like this next time.
On iOS Today.
Thanks, everybody. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Mikey.
Hey, folks, it's Micah Sargent here, co-host of Smart Tech Today right here on twit.tv. Every single week, Matthew Castanelli and I sit down to talk about smart tech for the week. That's right. It can get kind of complicated, but there's a lot of news out there. There's a lot of products to dig through. There are a lot of questions to answer, and we try to do that all every single week. From voice assistants to wearables to smart garage door openers and lights, there's so much to cover. and, well, so little time. So be sure to check it out. It's twit.tv/STT. Huh, that rhymes.